Chapter 71. One winter's evening, towards the close of the year 1800, or within a year or two of that time, a young medical practitioner, recently established in business, was seated by a cheerful fire in his little parlor, listening to the wind which was beating the rain in pattering drops against the window, or rumbling dismally in the chimney. The night was wet and cold. He had been walking through mud and water the whole day, and was now comfortably reposing in his dressing gown and slippers, more than half asleep, and less than half awake, revolving a thousand matters in his wandering imagination. First, he thought how hard the wind was blowing, and how the cold, sharp rain would be at that moment beating in his face, if he were not comfortably housed at home. Then, his mind reverted to his annual Christmas visit to his native place and dearest friends. He thought how glad they would all be to see him, and how happy it would make Rose, if he could only tell her that he had found a patient at last, and hoped to have more, and to come down again, in a few months' time, and marry her, and take her home to gladden his lonely fireside, and stimulate him to fresh exertions. Then, he began to wonder when his first patient would appear, or whether he was destined, by a special dispensation of Providence, never to have any patients at all. And then, he thought about Rose again, and dropped to sleep, and dreamed about her, till the tones of her sweet merry voice sounded in his ears, and her soft tiny hand rested on his shoulder. There was a hand upon his shoulder, but it was neither soft nor tiny. Its owner being a corpulent, round-headed boy, who, in consideration of the sum of 1 shilling per week and his food, was let out by the parish, to carry medicine and messages. As there was no demand for the medicine, however, and no necessity for the messages, he usually occupied his unemployed hours averaging 14 a day in abstracting peppermint drops, taking animal nourishment, and going to sleep. "A lady, sir, a lady!" " whispered the boy, rousing his master with a shake. "What lady?" " cried our friend, starting up, not quite certain that his dream was an illusion, and half expecting that it might be Rose herself. "What lady? Where?" "There, sir." " replied the boy, pointing to the glass door leading into the surgery, with an expression of alarm which the very unusual apparition of a customer might have tended to excite. The surgeon looked towards the door, and started himself, for an instant, on beholding the appearance of his unlooked-for visitor. It was a singularly tall woman, dressed in deep mourning, and standing so close to the door that her face almost touched the glass. The upper part of her figure was carefully muffled in a black shawl, as if for the purpose of concealment, and her face was shrouded by a thick black veil. She stood perfectly erect, her figure was drawn up to its full height, and though the surgeon felt that the eyes beneath the veil were fixed on him, she stood perfectly motionless, and evinced, by no gesture whatever, the slightest consciousness of his having turned towards her. "Do you wish to consult me?" " he inquired, with some hesitation, holding open the door. It opened inwards, and therefore the action did not alter the position of the figure, which still remained motionless on the same spot. She slightly inclined her head, in token of acquiescence. "Pray walk in," said the surgeon. The figure moved a step forward, and then, turning its head in the direction of the boy to his infinite horror, appeared to hesitate. "Leave the room, Tom," said the young man, addressing the boy, whose large round eyes had been extended to their utmost width during this brief interview. "Draw the curtain, and shut the door." The boy drew a green curtain across the glass part of the door, retired into the surgery, closed the door after him, and immediately applied one of his large eyes to the keyhole on the other side. The surgeon drew a chair to the fire, and motioned the visitor to a seat. The mysterious figure slowly moved towards it. As the blaze shone upon the black dress, the surgeon observed that the bottom of it was saturated with mud and rain. "You are very wet," " he said. I am, apostrophe said the stranger, in a low deep voice. And you are ill? Apostrophe apostrophe added the surgeon, compassionately, for the tone was that of a person in pain. I am, apostrophe was the reply very ill, not bodily, but mentally. It is not for myself, or on my own behalf, apostrophe continued the stranger, that I come to you. If I labored under bodily disease, I should not be out, alone, at such an hour, or on such a night as this. And if I were afflicted with it, 24 hours hence, God knows how gladly I would lie down, and pray to die. It is for another, that I beseech your aid, sir. I may be mad to ask it for him, I think I am. But, night after night, through the long dreary hours of watching and weeping, the thought has been ever present to my mind. And though even I see the hopelessness of human assistance availing him, the bare thought of laying him in his grave without it makes my blood run cold. Apostrophe apostrophe and a shudder, such as the surgeon well knew art could not produce, trembled through the speaker's frame. There was a desperate earnestness in this woman's manner that went to the young man's heart. He was young in his profession, and had not yet witnessed enough of the miseries which are daily presented before the eyes of its members, to have grown comparatively callous to human suffering. If, apostrophe he said, rising hastily, the person of whom you speak, be in so hopeless a condition as you describe, not a moment is to be lost. I will go with you instantly. Why did you not obtain medical advice before? Apostrophe apostrophe, because it would have been useless before, because it is useless even now, apostrophe replied the woman, clasping her hands passionately. The surgeon gazed, for a moment, on the black veil, as if to ascertain the expression of the features beneath it. Its thickness, however, rendered such a result impossible. You are ill, apostrophe he said, gently, although you do not know it. The fever which has enabled you to bear, without feeling it, the fatigue you have evidently undergone, is burning within you now. Put that to your lips, apostrophe he continued, pouring out a glass of water. Compose yourself for a few moments, and then tell me, as calmly as you can, what the disease of the patient is, and how long he has been ill. When I know what it is necessary I should know, to render my visit serviceable to him, I am ready to accompany you. Apostrophe, the stranger lifted the glass of water to her mouth, without raising the veil, put it down again untasted, and burst into tears. I know, apostrophe she said, sobbing aloud, that what I say to you now, seems like the ravings of fever. I have been told so before, less kindly than by you. I am not a young woman, and they do say, that as life steals on towards its final close, the last short remnant, worthless as it may seem to all beside, is dearer to its possessor than all the years, that have gone before, connected though they be with the recollection of old friends long since dead, and young ones' children perhaps who have fallen off from, and forgotten one as completely as if they had died too. My natural term of life cannot be many years longer, and should be dear on that account, but I would lay it down without a sigh with cheerfulness with joy, if what I tell you now, were only false, or imaginary. Tomorrow morning he of whom I speak will be, I know, though I would fain think otherwise, beyond the reach of human aid, and yet, tonight, though he is in deadly peril, you must not see, and could not serve, him. Apostrophe, I am unwilling to increase your distress, apostrophe said the surgeon, after a short pause, by making any comment on what you have just said, or appearing desirous to investigate a subject you are so anxious to conceal, but there is an inconsistency in your statement which I cannot reconcile with probability. This person is dying tonight, and I cannot see him, when my assistance might possibly avail. You apprehend it will be useless tomorrow, and yet you would have me see him then. If he be, indeed, as dear to you, as your words and manner would imply, why not try to save his life before delay, and the progress of his disease render it impracticable? Apostrophe apostrophe, God help me. ! Exclaimed the woman, weeping bitterly. How can I hope strangers will believe what appears incredible, even to myself? You will not see him then, sir? ! She added, rising suddenly. I did not say that I declined to see him, ! Replied the surgeon. But I warn you that if you persist in this extraordinary procrastination, and the individual dies, a fearful responsibility rests with you. ! The responsibility will rest heavily somewhere, ! Replied the stranger bitterly. Whatever responsibility rests with me, I am content to bear, and ready to answer. ! As I incur none, ! Continued the surgeon, by acceding to your request, I will see him in the morning, if you leave me the address. At what hour can he be seen? ! 9, ! Replied the stranger. You must excuse my pressing these inquiries, ! Said the surgeon. But is he in your charge now? ! He is not, ! Was the rejoinder. Then, if I gave you instructions for his treatment through the night, you could not assist him? ! The woman wept bitterly, as she replied, I could not. Finding that there was but little prospect of obtaining more information by prolonging the interview, and anxious to spare the woman's feelings, which, subdued at first by a violent effort, were now irrepressible and most painful to witness, the surgeon repeated his promise of calling in the morning at the appointed hour. His visitor, after giving him a direction to an obscure part of Walworth, left the house in the same mysterious manner in which he had entered it. It will be readily believed that so extraordinary a visit produced a considerable impression on the mind of the young surgeon, and that he speculated a great deal, and to very little purpose, on the possible circumstances of the case. In common with the generality of people, he had often heard and read of singular instances in which a presentiment of death at a particular day, or even minute, had been entertained and realized. At one moment he was inclined to think that the present might be such a case, but then it occurred to him that all the anecdotes of the kind he had ever heard were of persons who had been troubled with a foreboding of their own death. This woman, however, spoke of another person, a man, and it was impossible to suppose that a mere dream or delusion of fancy would induce her to speak of his approaching dissolution with such terrible certainty as she had spoken. It could not be that the man was to be murdered in the morning, and that the woman, originally a consenting party, and bound to secrecy by an oath, had relented, and, though unable to prevent the commission of some outrage on the victim, had determined to prevent his death if possible, by the timely interposition of medical aid? The idea of such things happening within 2 miles of the metropolis appeared too wild and preposterous to be entertained beyond the instant. Then, his original impression that the woman's intellects were disordered recurred. And, as it was the only mode of solving the difficulty with any degree of satisfaction, he obstinately made up his mind to believe that she was mad. Certain misgivings upon this point, however, stole upon his thoughts at the time, and presented themselves again and again through the long dull course of a sleepless night, during which, in spite of all his efforts to the contrary, he was unable to banish the black veil from his disturbed imagination. The back part of Walworth, at its greatest distance from town, is a straggling, miserable place enough, even in these days. But, 35 years ago, the greater portion of it was little better than a dreary waste, inhabited by a few scattered people of questionable character, whose poverty prevented their living in any better neighborhood, or whose pursuits and mode of life rendered its solitude desirable. Very many of the houses which have since sprung up on all sides were not built until some years afterwards. And the great majority even of those which were sprinkled about, at irregular intervals, were of the rudest and most miserable description. The appearance of the place through which he walked in the morning was not calculated to raise the spirits of the young surgeon, or to dispel any feeling of anxiety or depression which the singular kind of visit he was about to make had awakened. Striking off from the high road, his way lay across a marshy common, through irregular lanes, with here and there a ruinous and dismantled cottage fast falling to pieces with decay and neglect. A stunted tree, or pool of stagnant water, roused into a sluggish action by the heavy rain of the preceding night, skirted the path occasionally, and, now and then, a miserable patch of garden ground, with a few old boards knocked together for a summer house, and old palings imperfectly mended with stakes pilfered from the neighboring hedges, bore testimony, at once to the poverty of the inhabitants, and the little scruple they entertained in appropriating the property of other people to their own use. Occasionally, a filthy-looking woman would make her appearance from the door of a dirty house, to empty the contents of some cooking utensil into the gutter in front, or to scream after a little slipshod girl, who had contrived to stagger a few yards from the door under the weight of a sallow infant almost as big as herself. But, scarcely anything was stirring around. And so much of the prospect as could be faintly traced through the cold damp mist which hung heavily over it, presented a lonely and dreary appearance perfectly in keeping with the objects we have described. After plodding wearily through the mud and mire, making many inquiries for the place to which he had been directed, and receiving as many contradictory and unsatisfactory replies in return, the young man at length arrived before the house which had been pointed out to him as the object of his destination. It was a small low building, one story above the ground, with even a more desolate and unpromising exterior than any he had yet passed. An old yellow curtain was closely drawn across the window upstairs, and the parlor shutters were closed, but not fastened. The house was detached from any other, and, as it stood at an angle of a narrow lane, there was no other habitation in sight. When we say that the surgeon hesitated, and walked a few paces beyond the house, before he could prevail upon himself to lift the knocker, we say nothing that need raise a smile upon the face of the boldest reader. The police of London were a very different body in that day. The isolated position of the suburbs, when the rage for building and the progress of improvement had not yet begun to connect them with the main body of the city and its environs, rendered many of them, and this in particular, a place of resort for the worst and most depraved characters. Even the streets in the gayest parts of London were imperfectly lighted at that time, and such places as these were left entirely to the mercy of the moon and stars. The chances of detecting desperate characters, or of tracing them to their haunts, were thus rendered very few, and their offenses naturally increased in boldness, as the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.